Good morning. Today's daf in Yevamos Ayin Tes. We are in the eighth parak of the Masechta, and most of the discussion of this parak is a long parak, has been regarding Arelus. The topic of Arelus having not much to do with the mitzvah of Yibum, as we have now pointed out, the seventh and eighth parak has been a diversion from the mitzvah of Yibum. Happens to be that tomorrow we're going to come back to the topics of Yibum. But nevertheless, we've been on some detour. And within this detour that we've taken here in the eighth paragraph, we talked about the issue of chasnas. So who can you and who can you not marry? A topic that really overlaps with the fourth paragraph of Kedushin, meaning if you want to really see two parakim side by side, say you take the eighth paragraph of Yevamos and the fourth paragraph of Kedushin, and you really get a good picture of ishus, of who you can and who you cannot marry. Yesterday, an entire day dedicated to Mitzri Adomi, Amon Moav really takes us back to Ein Zion. Right? Ein Zion, I guess we could call the Amon Moav daf, and yesterday we can call the Mitzri daf, Mitzri Adami. For three generations, you cannot marry them even post-conversion. Not even post-conversion, but after post-conversion, meaning before conversion, there's nothing to talk about. There's no chasnas as it relates to a Jew and non-Jew, but once they convert, and now there's chasnas at least we could talk about. So for generations 1 and 2 by Mitzri and Adomi, so it's an Isser in the Torah. It's an Isser Aseh. It's a positive commandment. Because the Torah says, Ador Shlishi Yavo Bekal, that by the third generation, so then they can go ahead and they can marry within Kahal, they can marry within the Jewish people. So that means that by deduction, first and second generation, they cannot, and that's what we discussed at length yesterday. We're moving on now in the Mishnah. We're talking now about a mamzer and a sin. So we are in Ein Chesem and Beis. We are about a third of the way down. We're starting with the Mishnah. A very short Mishnah. Mamzer and a sinim, asurim, visur, misur olam. So as it relates to mamzer and a sin, so they're going to be prohibited. The prohibition is going to exist in perpetuity, meaning that there is no cap in generations. For generations 1, 2, 3, 4, ad infinitum, they're going to be prohibited. And that's going to be true by both male and female. The reason why the Mishnah point this out over here is because that's in contrast to Moav and Ammon. Moav and Ammon, so the prohibition is only going to be for the males, not for the females. For Mitzri and Adomi, so as we pointed out yesterday, it's Machlokas Tanaim, between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon. And now as it relates to Mamzer, there's no Machlokas, meaning by Mamzer, so the prohibition is going to be Echad Zachar Mecha Nekevos. Okay, most of today's daf, we're going to be speaking about Nesinim, so we're going to take the Nesinim, and I didn't explain them, and we're going to put them on the back burner, because they're going to come up, they're going to come back again, and we're going to be discussing them really for the bulk of today's daf. But let's talk about mamzeres right now. So first of all, what is a mamzer? So that's something that we have litigated and discussed numerous times in our Masechta. Most notably, I guess the daf that really covers this most directly is Memtes. Okay, I hope my memory serves me correct. Good? Okay, I'm good today. So at least for this moment. So a Memtes, a Manalth, there's a Mishnah, Izu Mamzer. What creates a Mamzer? So without going through the entire discussion over there, let's just reduce it down to what the halacha is. And that is that what is a Mamzer is that when there's no Tfisas Kedushin, when a man and woman have an illicit relations, and the illicit relations is so strong that the Kedushin does not take hold, there's no Tfisas Kedushin, i.e. it's an Isser Kares, so then the result of that union is going to be a Mamzer. Okay, the classic example, but there are numerous examples, obviously, but the classic example would be Niyuf. A woman commits adultery, and that relationship is an Isser Kares, to commit adultery. It's also a capital crime as well. In other words, if there are witnesses and warning, it's subject to Mises Beis Din, but just at its core, at its essence, it's an Isser Kares. So that means to say that if a woman has an adulterous affair and has a child through this adulterous affair, the child is a mamzer. Okay. We discussed this at length on Daf Memtes, but here now we're discussing now the status of Mamzer, and this Mamzer, as it relates to Ishus, this Mamzer now is not allowed to marry anyone Bekal, anyone who is a member of the Jewish people, so this Mamzer is not allowed to marry. Who can the Mamzer marry? So most obviously a Mamzer can marry another Mamzer. There are other people within the population that a Mamzer can marry. Really, we're not going to be discussing that right now. But okay, the Mishnah here is focusing on the status of a mamzer. So they are not allowed to marry, and the status of mamzer goes out in vanitem and echad zechar v'echad nekevus, and it applies to both male and female. That is a quick discussion regarding our Mishnah and mamzeres. Amar Reish Lakish. We start with the Gemara. Again, we're in Ein Chesem and Beis, and we begin the following discussion. Short discussion regarding mamzer. Amar Reish Lakish mamzeres la'acha asara daros mutaris. So when it comes to a mamzer and it's after 10 generations, and we're talking about the female, so then mutar. So Reish Lakish has a tremendous chiddush, which is that there's a cap. Now, I say it's a tremendous chiddush. The Torah itself says 4 to 10 generations. So the number 10 is not a manufactured number. It actually comes from the Pesukim in the Torah. But yet, we know that, generally speaking, when you see the number 10, as far as generations and concerns, it really means ad infinitum. Reish Lakish over here is introducing us to a tremendous chiddush, and that there is a cap regarding Mamzeres 10 generations later. Now, admittedly, 10 generations is a really long time, right? Figure generation to be 30 years, just I'm ballparking it. So you're talking about, you know, approximately 300 years later. Okay, but still, Reish Lakish says there's a cap to Mamzeres. There has to be 10 generations, and it has to be specifically Nekevas. It's females. So Yalef Asir Asir Me'amoni Mo'avi. And the reason why is because he learns it out through a Gzer Shava. Malahal Nekevas Mutaros, Afka Nekevas Mutaros. So we know as it relates to Ma'amon and Mo'av. So the females are Mutar. Now, admittedly, right away, so we have the word Asiri as it relates to Mamzer, so it's going to be right away. Ima lahala miyad afka miyad. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, if we're talking about a gzera shava, so then why don't we just assume that it means the same thing? Meaning the word Asiri as it relates to Amon Amov is only talking about the males. The females are mutter immediately. Any female from Amon Amov who converts, you're allowed to marry them, meaning them themselves. You don't have to wait 1 generation, 2 generations, nothing. In other words, they're mutters miyad. So why don't we say the same thing regarding Mamzer, if in fact you're learning this Gzera Shava. So Kiyahani Gzera Shava miyasir ve'elech. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Gzera Shava is only for 10th generation and onward. The Ha'anan Tanan Mamzerim Nesinim Masurim Vesurim Isar Olam Echad Zechar Me'echad Nekevos. Now the Gemara points out the next obvious question, which is that what Reish Lakish is saying is in fact opposed to the Mishnah. The Mishnah obviously does not subscribe to this viewpoint. The Mishnah says that when it comes to a Mamzer, the Mamzer status continues in perpetuity. So Lo Kasha, Hakamanda Amar Don Mina Minag, Hakamanda Amar Don Mina V'Uka Basra. So the Gemara says that the difference between the Mishnah and Reish Lakish is how far to extend Gzera Shava. Meaning we have Gzera Shava that brings the halacha from point A to point B, and this is a discussion that comes up numerous times throughout Shas, and that is that when I learn a halacha via Gzera Shava, so do we say domina umina, or do we say domina v'uka ba'asra? So first let's discuss this on a very basic conceptual level. What is the difference between the two ways to how to darshan Gzera Shava? So let's start off with domina umina. Domina umina means don. The word don means to make a din, to learn via a drasha. Mina umina, from it and from it. Meaning, domina umina tells me that when I'm making a gzereshav, extending halacha from point A to point B, so what we're going to do is we're going to take the halacha from point A, we're going to insert it into point B, and umina, and you just keep going. Meaning, wherever the Gzera Shava takes us, wherever the halacha takes us, I do not contextualize the halacha into point B. We just simply apply the halacha regardless of what the context is. On the other hand, domina v'uka basra tells me that we're going to take the halacha, domina v'uka basra, but we're going to put it in its place. Meaning, we're going to contextualize it. We're going to look at the halacha as it fits into the second location, into point B, and we're going to say, yeah, but how does that halacha fit over here? And so this is a general discussion, debate amongst the Amoraim Tanaim in terms of how to make a Gzera Shava, Domina Umina, or Domina V'uka Basra. How would that play out over here? Rashi admits that there is more than one way to say it, but Rashi has a preferred way to say it, so we're going to say it over like Rashi. If you want to follow me, I'm going to be reading the Rashi over here. It's the first really wide line towards the bottom of the Amud. Reish Lakish Savar. Oh, by the way, before we do the Rashi, just an interesting point over here, and that is we have a machlokus between Reish Lakish and the Mishnah. Okay, this is going to be a collector's item, meaning generally speaking, we have a machlokus amongst the Amoraim. We have a machlokus amongst the Tanaim. We almost never have a machlokus between an Amora and a Tana. There is a number of Gemaras that talk about Rav Tanu Palig, that Rav was right on the border between Tanaim and Amoraim. Rav had the ability to argue with a Tana, but outside of that, it's a rarity. Here you have Reish Lakish against the Mishnah, so it's a collector's item, meaning if I can remember, there is a Gemara in Yevamos, and Daf Ayin Chesam and Beis, meaning our Daf, that tells us that Reish Lakish is arguing with a Mishnah. Okay, collector's item. Anyway, Reish Lakish Savar, I'm reading the Rashi over here, it's the first wide line. Savar Kaman Damar Domina Mina. So it's Reish Lakish who takes the position of Domina Mina, meaning you take the halacha, move it from A to B, and just put it there regardless of what the context is. Malahalana ad olam afkan ad olam. So, as it relates to as it relates to the Amon HaMoav. So that is in perpetuity. Same thing with Mamzeres. Uminam alahalan zecharim v'lo nekevos. I've kind zecharim v'lo nekevos. Midoras yirve'elechu degamrinan. So, and at the same time, we're also going to not regard context, meaning just like by Amon HaMoav, it only applies to the male, not to the female. So too by Mamzeres, it's only going to apply to the male, not to the female. Now, here's the part where it gets tricky. Well, if that's true, so why don't we say then that the female Mamzer is Muteres Miyad? So Rashi says that we can't say. Because up to the 10th generation, there's just simply no room for the Gzeres Shavah. Meaning the Gzeres Shavah only begins from the 10th generation and onward. Meaning as a result of the fact that the Torah uses the word Mamzer and says for 10 generations, and as we already established earlier in our parak, Mamzer is a compound of the word Mumzar, which means that this is a blemish, regardless of what gender is. So for the first 10 generations, we simply don't have we don't even have a place for the Gzeres Shavah. The only place that the Gzeres Shavah can even begin is post 10 generations. Okay, so the Gzeres Shavah only begins post 10 generations, and Domina Mina, meaning that just like by Amon HaMoav, it's only male and not female, so too, post 10th generation, it's only male, not female. That is how Reish Lakish would learn it. Vitana didan savar, Rashi then points out, now what's our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is of the position, lo kamandama dominavu, savala, kamandama dominavu uka basra, that you contextualize the Gezerah Shavah. Dominam alahalan ad olam, af mamzer ad olam. Vuki basra ki demikar, yodoros dekra acher zechan vecha nekevos, dechsiv mamzer mumzar, hachinami ad olam, demaisinim Gezerah Shavah echer zechan vecha nekevos. Kach shamati. So Rashi says that we have to contextualize, just like the Isra of Amon HaMoav goes in perpetuity, so too over here, as it relates to Mamzer, goes in perpetuity, but contextualize it, because we know that Mamzer does not discriminate between male and female, meaning it's Mumzar. So we have to contextualize it. You have to take the ad infinitum, the perpetuity of the status, and extend it to both male and female, because in the context of Mamzer, it applies to both male and female. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Gemara's discussion regarding Mamzerus, and Shalu es Rabbi Eliezer. I'm almost right. We have a little bit more, just a couple more lines of Gemara regarding Mamzerus. We are on Ayin Chesamud Beis, just short of halfway down on the Amud, first words in the line. Shalu es Rabbi Eliezer, Mamzerus la'achar asar dari mahu. So what is the status regarding a Mamzerus after 10 generations? Amar lahem, miyitein li dor shlishi ve'atarenu. So the response that he gives is kind of a non-response. He says, look, you're not even going to find a Mamzer after 3 generations. And as Rashi explains over here, and the Gemara is really going to be clear, in other words, the idea here is that just the Mamzer just simply does not continue in terms of generations. Meaning a Kadosh Baruch Hu makes sure that you have a Mamzer, and obviously it's a taint. It really restricts who you can marry. And so Kadosh Baruch Hu makes sure that they kind of fade out of existence. So Amakasavar Mamzer Lochaya. So the Gemara says, okay. So by the answer that was provided by Rabbi Eliezer, you see that a Mamzer just doesn't survive. Meaning generationally, the Mamzer will just simply fade away. Vechenama Ravuna Mamzer Lochaya. And Ravuna also is of that position as well. Meaning a Kadosh Baruch Hu ensures naturally, meaning through just short lifespans and a number of other factors, that a Mamzer will not continue, not even for 3 generations. So the Gemara says, yeah, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says it extends for 10 generations and beyond, meaning our Mishnah over here. Now, it's funny, you could have just simply said that our Mishnah is talking about theoretically, and Rav Huna and Rabbi Eliezer were talking practically. You could have said that. The Gemara elects to go in a different route. So Amar Rabbi Zera Lididi Mifarsh Leminei de Rav Yehuda Diyad Chaye, the Lo Diyad de Lo Chaye. So the Gemara now has a tradition. Rabbi Zera presents this tradition, and that is basically we're working with 3 categories. The 3 categories are as follows. So if somebody is a mamzer has no idea that they're a mamzer, so they're lochaya. So that person themselves are not going to be living a long life. Again, Akash Baruch Hu is going to make sure that the mamzeres will just simply not be mixed into the fabric of the Jewish people. If a person knows their mamzer definitively, so then chaye. So then they're going to live, and not only that they're going to live, but they're going to progenate, and they're going to have another generation. Let's assume they're going to marry who they're supposed to marry, meaning, but they're going to continue in terms of generations. That's our Mishnah. And then let's say somebody's on the fence, meaning they may be a mamzer. They don't know. Unfortunately, family records are not strong. They heard rumors, they heard reports, but they're not sure. So in other words, a safek. So then three generations, but no more than three generations. So those are the three categories of mamzeris. Those who have no idea, those who definitively know, and those who are in a state of safek. And then one more line regarding mamzeris. How would Ave Bishavusi the Rabbi Ami, Achriz Allah de Mamzera Hava, Bachava Azo. So a person was in the community of Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami made a proclamation that this person is a mamzer. Again, we're talking about it in the most legal definition of mamzer, meaning making no comment whatsoever about his personality. In other words, unfortunately, the term has been corrupted. We've used the term now to describe traits that we don't like and people that we don't like, and the term has taken on a totally different connotation. But anyway, the Gemara here is just talking about the very basic definition that he's a mamzer. He's a product of an illicit union. So generationally, he came from somebody who was a product of an illicit union. So anyway, so he was a mamzer. So the person now who was the subject of this proclamation, so he was crying, understandably, heartbroken over the fact that he's been announced, declared to be a mamzer. And that really will limit and restrict who can marry. So Amrlei Chaim Nasatilach. So what Rabbi Ami said is, look, what I'm doing is I'm giving you life, meaning go back to what we learned just moments earlier regarding the three categories. And I just put you in the category of somebody who knows definitively. Obviously, Rabbi Ami must have had the information clear. He knew this information, and he wanted to make sure other people knew the information as well. Meaning Rabbi Ami was not perpetuating some sort of rumor allegation, meaning he knew. And he was just simply sharing this information with others. And to try to make the person feel a little bit better, he told the person that really what I've done is I've given you life. I put you now in that category of you're going to be going and living for a while, and you're going to have children, they're going to have children, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Softening the blow, if you will. We are in Ein Ches Amud Beis, and now we turn to what is going to be the bulk of today's daf, and that's going to be the Nesinim. The Mishnah tells us that a Nesin is going to have the status of a Nesin, and that will be true for his generation, next generation, in perpetuity, just like a mamzer. Okay, and now we can ask a really simple question, which we could have asked back in the Mishnah, but I knew that the Gemara is going to be spending most of today's daf discussing, and that is, what is a Nesin? So you're going to see this term coming up again and again throughout Shas. So it's going to be today's daf, Yevamos Ayin Tes, which is going to be the main Gemara that discusses exactly who they were and for what reason is it that we're not allowed to marry them. We start with the Gemara Amar Rav Chana. Amar Rav Chana Bar Ada Nesinim David Gazar Aleihem. So as far as the Nesinim are concerned, so David made Gzera against them, meaning David HaMelech. So during his reign on the Jewish people, first king of the Jewish people, first king from Yehuda of the Jewish people, so he made a gzera on the Nesinim that the Jewish people are not allowed to marry the Nesinim. So Shenemar. So here we go. We're going to be spending a good amount of time in the 21st parak of Shmuel Beis. Shenemar Veikra HaMelech LeGivonim. So first of all, Nesinim is also known as the Givonim, meaning they are a nationality of non-Jews, happened to be going by Givonim. Now, we've seen them already going back to Yehoshua, when Yehoshua entered into Eretz Yisrael, and later we're going to note that. Meaning, it sounds like the Givonim just emerged in the generation of David HaMelech, which is, in fact, not the case. They go all the way back to Yehoshua. Hold that question, hold that thought. We're coming back to that later. Anyway, so here we are in the 21st parak of Shmuel Beis. Okay, so they're not a member of the Jewish people, meaning they're non-Jews, living in Israel. My time Gazar Alayu, Dichsiv. So the obvious question now is that what happened? Meaning what precipitated that David HaMelech made a gzera, a rabbinic ban, that we, the Jewish people, are not allowed to marry anyone from the Givonim, and obviously we're talking about after they convert. Even post-conversion, I want to check myself, not even post-conversion. Before conversion, there's nothing to talk about. Meaning there's no chasnos before conversion. But post-conversion, so you're not allowed to marry them, als the gzera of David HaMelech. And even though generationally, let's say they go next generation, the generation after that, where they're the child of a convert, the grandchild of a convert, so still, the gzera will continue in perpetuity.
right? Unlike, right, just to contrast that to Mitzri and Edomi, so third generation, so you're allowed to marry them. But when it comes to the Nisinim, even second, third, fourth generation post-conversion, so you're not allowed to marry them. So what's the what precipitated all this? So the Gemara here goes over the background. Vayihi Rabbi Meidav Shaloshanim. Shana achar shana, 3 years consecutive of famine during the times of the Dovin HaMelech. Shana vishana amar lam shema ovdeko avodas kochav miyishpachem. So he understood that the famine, obviously, on account of our avera. So he did a background check on the Jewish people to find out what's going on. So the first year, he thought that the investigation would lead him down the path of avodah zarah, that there was idolatry. In fact, the reason why he thought so is because of the second parak of Shema. Second paragraph of Shema says very clearly that as a result of avodah zarah, so that will result in a stoppage of the rain. So but that investigation proved to be fruitless. Shnia Amar Lahem, so in the second year, he said, Shema Ovrei Averi Yishbachem. Well, maybe the people were acting in sexually immoral ways. Dechziv, Ayimnu, Revivim, Omakosh, Loaya, Umeitzachisha, Zona, Ayalach. Pasuk in Yirmiyahu correlates that sexually immoral behavior will lead to a lack of rain. So, Batkivlo Matu. So, once again, that investigation also proved to be fruitless. Shlishis Amar Lahem, now in the third year, so Shema Poskei Tzedakah Barabim Yeshvachem Einosnim. So maybe people pledged to give money and people didn't come through on their pledge. Dechsiv Nesim Baruch V'geshem Ayin Ish Mesala B'masa Sheker. When people make false claims, and in this context we're understanding false claims as false promises, that they were going to be giving a certain amount of money and they didn't give the money. So then as a result of that, the rains are going to stop. So Batke V'lo Matzo. So once again, in that third year, in that third investigation, so once again, that investigation led nowhere. That wasn't, in fact, the case. So, running out of ideas in terms of why, in fact, there was a famine. So, Amar Eina Davatalu Elabi. So he said, okay, the only one who could really properly understand this, I'm sorry, the finger should be pointed only in my direction. So, Miyad V'yivakesh Tav Espanei Hashem. So David Sikta Kadosh Baruch Hu. So my he Amarish Lakish Shal Urim V'Tumim, meaning at that point in time, David HaMelech asked the Urim V'Tumim. Okay, I really don't have a great explanation, but it's clear from our Gemara over here that the Urim V'Tumim is not a first resort for reasons that I can't articulate why. Meaning, when you have the ability to ask the Urim V'Tumim and you don't do so immediately, and you allow 3 years of a famine to go by, so it must be. And again, I'm just observing. I don't really have a good explanation. It must be that the Urim V'Tumim is not a first resort. It's got to be more like a last resort. So he asked the Urim V'Tumim. So my mashma amar Rav Elazar asked the Panei k'siv hachav yivakesh avos Panei Hashem v'k'siv hasam v'shal lo b'mishpan Urim l'fnei Hashem. Gzeira Shava, even though in the Psukim themselves it doesn't say the word Urim V'Tumim, but Gzeira Shava tells us that it was the Urim V'Tumim. V'yamar Hashem al shove al beis adamim al asher himisa ha'givonim. So al shol shalom, I'm sorry. So there were really two things that were called to task regarding what David HaMelech did. Actually, one was good and one was bad. So, well, we'll clarify that better in just a moment. Al-Shal Shalom Nisbei Ka'alacha. So as far as Shaul is concerned, so he didn't receive a proper eulogy. I don't mean good vis-a-vis David, but good vis-a-vis Shaul. So as far as Shaul is concerned, so he didn't get a proper eulogy. Shaul was killed. Right? The end of Shmuel Aleph, Shaul was killed himself. Anyway, but so he died, and he wasn't given a proper hesped. David HaMelech did not give Shaul a proper hesped. And Ve'al Beis Adamim, Al Asher Emisi Givonim. And also on top of that, Shaul also killed the Givonim as well. Now the Gemara says, what just happened? Shaul killed the Givonim? V'chi Heichel Matzina B'Shaul Shehem is the Givonim. When exactly did that happen? That never happened. So Ela Mitoch Shaharag No V'ir HaKohanim Shayu Maspikim Lahem Ma'im Amazim Amalim Alav Ki'ilu HaKosav Ki'ilu Hargan. So the Gemara says that here's what we know. We know that Shaul killed Nov Ira Kohanim, Nov the city of Kohanim. Shaul killed out that entire city, and the reason why he did so is because Shaul was suspicious of the fact that they hid David HaMelech. Now it happens to be that the suspicion was true, and Nov Ira Kohanim did in fact harbor and hide David HaMelech, who was running away from Shaul, and that part's true. But obviously the response of Shaul was simply way overbounds. And that is that he killed off the entire city of Kohanim. Now, as far as the city of Kohanim are concerned, so they were provided fire and water from the Givonim. If you look at Rashi over here, three lines from the bottom. Kohanim, you must speak on Maimu Mazon. I'm sorry, Mazon le Givonim. So they were providing food for the Givonim. Shayu Chot ve Eitzim v'Shoa ve Maim le Mizbech. Because what the Givonim would do is that they would provide the wood and the water for the Mizbech. Kidichsev, the pasuk says, be Yoshua. And so here we are. So we are lightly referencing Yoshua. We're going to come back to it later this morning, and that is v'loyichras mehem chot ve'eitzim v'shoa ve'mayim lebeis elokai. That already going back to the time of Yoshua. So the givonim slash nesinim. So they were going to be given enslavement, and that is that they were going to be providing wood and water to the mizbeach. Okay, wood is a little bit easy to understand. Wood obviously is the fuel for the mizbeach. Water a little bit less. A little bit more challenging to understand exactly what the water was for the Mizbeach. Nisach HaMayim, maybe, whatever the case may be. In other words, in exchange for providing for the Mizbeach, so the Givonim took care of them financially, meaning they provided sustenance for them. So what Shaul did is that Shaul cut off the sustenance for the Givonim by killing off Novi Arakoanim. So, and when you shut off sustenance to people, it's ke'ilu, it's as if you kill those people. Ke'ilu argan. We're back to the Gemara. Katav al Shaul Shalom nispe ka'alacha ve'katav al asher ha'imis ha'givonim. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, let's get this straight. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is calling David into his office for two things. Not properly eulogizing Shaul HaMelech and the responsibility that Shaul had in terms of the death of not only Novi Yerachonim, that was direct, but the indirect death of the Givonim, because now the Givonim no longer have sustenance. And so which one is it? Meaning, was should Shaul have been properly eulogized, or should he be called to task for the averus that he did? And how could it be that when David HaMelech is now being assigned fault and blame over here for not taking care of these things, so they seem to be going in two totally different directions. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. They are going in two different directions. But again, it just speaks to people are complicated, and Shaul HaMelech had good and he had bad, and so for the bad, so you need to try to do good by the bad that Shaul did, and Shaul also needed a good eulogy. He needed a hesped. So the Amrish Lakish might say, "Big Shuas Hashem call Anve Aretz Asher Mishpato Faalo, Asher Mishpato Sham Faalo." When you judge a person, you also talk about what he did, the good things that he did as well. Meaning, it's not incongruous to say that a person did good things and a person did bad things as well, right? It's not the old westerns where it's black and white. In other words, people are both. So Amr David Shaul Nafkaluhu Treisay Yachishas Velo Darchele Mispidei. So David HaMelech says in response, in his defense, so number one, it's been well over a year since Shaul HaMelech died, and it's just simply not appropriate to eulogize. You don't eulogize somebody after a year. Meaning within the first year, that's the appropriate time to eulogize. Obviously, the most appropriate time to eulogize is before you bury the individual. But even after you bury the individual, but it's within a year, it's an appropriate time to eulogize. Here, it's after a year. Rashi points out over here on the very top, it's well after a year. Meaning Rashi goes through the chronology over here. We're talking about 3 years after the death of Shaul. So then I get a little bit stuck over here. Meaning if David has a legitimate excuse in terms of why it is that he didn't eulogize Shaul, so then how could he be called to task for it? Okay, I'm not sure. In other words, he should have done it, obviously, but now at this point in time, it's too late, and it certainly sounds like from the Gemara that David HaMelech was right. It's just simply too late. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Vayikra HaMelech L'Givonim, Vayomar Lehem, Ma'aseh Lachem, Uvama Echaper, Uvarchus Nachalas Hashem, Vayomar Lo Givonim, Ein Lanu Kesef Vezav, Im Shaul Ve'am Beiso, Ve'ein Lanu Ish V'chulei. So over here now, but the second part, however, in terms of what Shaul did to the Givonim, cutting off their food supply, so that's something that David could have fixed and corrected, and that's what we're learning right now. So on the top of Ayin Tesem and Aleph, so we're quoting more Pesukim from the 21st Perek of Shmuel Beis, where David HaMelech approaches the Givonim and basically says, "No, what can I do?" Meaning, I know what Shaul did to you was terrible. How can I make it up to you? So, Yutan Lanu Shiva Anashim Yibanav Huk Anum LaHashem VeGomer. So, and they say, "Look, what you're going to do is you're going to give us 7 members of the family of Shaul, and you're going to hang them, kill them, hang them, and hang them for a long time." I say that because of the Gemara that's coming up. We're going to see together in just a moment. So mefais velo paisinu. So David HaMelech at that point in time looked to appease the Gavonim, meaning obviously that is a cruel act of revenge that they want to inflict on the house of Shaul. They want to kill seven members of his family. That's rough. And David HaMelech thought that there may be other ways of reparation. Right? There's got to be maybe financial reparations that we could talk about. And he looked for other ways to try to appease them. But they had nothing doing. In other words, this is what they wanted to do in order to feel fully satisfied and vindicated for the evil that befell their family as a result of Shaul. So Amar Shloshes Yisamanim Yesh Be'umazu. So at that point in time, David HaMelech said, look, the Jewish people are characterized by three different traits. So Rachmanim, they have Rachmanus, Baishanim, they have Busha, and Gomle Chasadim. And they're just good people. And they want to do good to other people. So Rachmanim dechsev anasal lechem rachamecha v'richam chavir becha. Baishanim dechsev avortiya yirasso al penechem. Gomle chasam dechsev laman asher yitzavaz banav ez beiso. So as far as these three traits are concerned, the Gemara quotes Pesukim that gives sources for these three traits. Kol sheyesh bo shoshes emanim ala lo rayli dabek bo mazu. And anyone who has these three traits, so rayli hidabek bo mazu is fit to join the Jewish people. Obviously, the Givonim, as much as they were wronged, and as much as they deserve some sort of reparation, but the fact of the matter is that they wanted to kill members of the family of Shaul, and that would be the only way that they were going to be assuaged, so they do not have these characteristics. Therefore, David concluded, they should not become members of the Jewish people, meaning again, they can convert and they can become full-fledged Jews. But to attach themselves to the Jewish people and allow Jewish people to marry them even in their converted state, so David HaMelech said, nothing doing. So as we're going to see, he yields to their demands, but at the same time, he also sanctions them and tells them and us, the Jewish people, that we are never to marry them. And we're going to go on now in the Pesukim in Shmuel Aleph. And by the way, these three traits, these three characteristics that were learned, that they're Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomel Chasadim, so the Maharal connects them to the Avos, Avram Avinu being from Gomel Chesed, and Yitzchak being Abusha, and Yaakov being Rachmanus. And the Maharal over here in our Gemara goes into detail regarding how each of the Avos represent each of these character traits. But anyway, we're going to go on. Vayikach HaMelech Shnei B'nei Ritzba Basaya Asher Yalda L'Shol Es Armoni Ve'es Mifivosh ואס חמשת בני מיכל בשול אשר ילדה לאדריאל בן ברזילי המחולסי. So David HaMelech takes seven family members. We're going to go a little bit further than the Gemara, and then I'm going to come back and discuss one of the family members that he took. So Maishna Hani, so how did David HaMelech know to take these family members? Meaning, David HaMelech is taking people in order to be executed. We're talking about capital punishment over here. How do you know which ones to take? So Amar Rav Huna, Evrim Lifnei Aram, Kol She'Aron Kol To Lemisa, Kol She'in Aron Kol To L'Chaim. So what David HaMelech did is that he didn't do any of the any of the judgment. He left that to the Aron. He passed them in front of the Aron. The Aron screened them, and anyone who was held back by the Aron, so that were going to be collected for this capital punishment. So Meisav Rav Chana Bar Kitina Vayichmol HaMelech Al Mefi Boshet Ben Yosan Ben Shaul. So he had Rachmanus on Mifi Boshes. Now he had Rachmanus on Mifi Boshes. Now we just said that Mifi Boshes was one of the people that were in fact taken and collected. So how the Gemara over here saying that he had Rachmanus on Mifi Boshes, the son of Yonas ben Shaul. So how could that possibly be? So I'll address that in just a moment. But meanwhile, how could it be that he davened for Mifi Boshes when Mifi Boshes was quote unquote collected by the Aron? So David HaMelech davened so that he wouldn't be collected. So what he davened is that he wouldn't even be screened. So the Gemara says, wait one second, you can't do that, meaning every member of the family has to be screened, and David HaMelech simply had no right not to pass somebody in front of the Aron. So the Gemara says, well, what happened was is that Mifi Boshes went in front of the Aron for screening. He was held back by the Aron, and David HaMelech prayed that and davened that he would be released. So to which the Gemara says, wait one second, that can't be. Once again, once he was collected, there's nothing to talk about. So what David HaMelech davened for is that the Aron just simply would not hold him back. Okay, fine, period. Okay, so what we have over here is a detailed discussion on our Gemara using the Pesukim and also using the Mesorah in terms of exactly what happened, how David was able to detain, retain, and eventually kill off seven members of the family of Shaul in order to appease the Givonim for the violations of what Shaul HaMelech did. In a moment, the Gemara is going to ask the question. You can't punish a son based on the averus of the father. The Gemara is going to ask that question in just a moment. But if we could just detour for just a quick moment and ask the obvious question, Mephibosheth was saved. Meanwhile, you go back earlier in the Gemara. Mephibosheth was one of the seven family members who was detained and eventually killed. So how could the Gemara just say that he was saved at the same time as noting that he was one of the seven members? So Tosfos points out over here. Tosfos on the top of the Amud, Ayin Tes Amud Aleph, says there are two Mephibosheths. Omer Rabbeinu Tam. Tosfos writes, I'm reading the Tosfos. Duhu Aya Rabbi Shal David. So he was the Rebbe of David. Amar Beperakam of the Bracha. She Hayim Vayesh Bnei David Baalacha. So the Mephibosheth that we're discussing over here that was actually killed was the Rebbe of David HaMelech, the direct son of Shaul. As opposed to the Mephibosheth that was saved, that's the grandson of Shaul, the son of Yehonasan. So to suggest that Mephibosheth, the son of Yonasan, was the Rebbe of David, you can't say that, says Rabbi Natam. So basically, there are two Mephibosheths. One, the son of Yonasan. Two, the son of Shaul. The son of Shaul was the Rebbe to David HaMelech. That's the one that's being described over here in the 21st parak of Shmuel Beis. So says Rabbi Natam. Which then leads us to a question. Rabbi Natam asked the obvious question. So wait one second. So let's get this straight, says Rabbi Natam. David HaMelech David for Mephibosheth, the son of Yonasan, because of his relationship with Yonasan. So now David HaMelech wouldn't daven for his Rebbe? That's really strange, notes Rabbi Natam. So the Gemara says, V'yeshlam d'shem abikesh v'lo nana. So what you could suggest is that, no, he davened for his Rebbe. And he wasn't answered. Meaning that the David HaMelech davened twice, for Mephibosheth and for Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is Rebbe, the son of Shaul, and he davened for Mephibosheth, his best friend's son. And for one he was answered, and for one he was not answered. Okay, a lot of interesting discussions over here. We're back to the Gemara. We're on Ayin Tes Amud Aleph. We're more than halfway down in the Amud. And now the question. I don't understand, says the Gemara. You're not allowed to take any onish, any avera of one person, and then devolve that onto the next generation. What's going on over here? So Amr Abichi Abarab, Amr Av Yochanan, Mutav Shetea Karos Achaz Menator, Va'al Yizchal Hashem Shemayim Befer Hesya. So the Gemara's answer, really powerful answer, is that we're talking about Chilul Hashem. So when we're talking about Chilul Hashem over here, so then we're Ma'akir Osachas. We're going to uproot a letter of the Torah over here, more than a letter of the Torah, meaning a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk says, "Lo yumsu avos abanim." So the general is that children are not going to be taken for averus of their fathers. That's generally true, and that's generally speaking how din would work. But over here, since we're talking about such a major Chilul Hashem, where Shaul not only killed Novi Arkanim, but all indirectly killed Givonim as well. So we're talking about such a Chilul Hashem. So for Chilul Hashem, we're Ma'akir Os Achas Min HaTorah. We uproot a pasuk in the Torah. Vatikach Ratzpa Bas Aya Es Hasak Vatateo La Al Atzor Mitchilas Kitzir Ad Netech Mayim Aleihem Min HaShemayim Velo Nasna Of HaShemayim Lanuach Aleihem Yomam V'chayis Asada Laila. We're continuing here in the 21st parak of Shmuel Beis. And the Ratzpa Bas Aya. So what she did is she watched the bodies. The bodies were hung and left to hang for an entire season. And what she wanted to do was make sure that no birds of prey would come over and attack the bodies. She protected the bodies for that entire time. And again, this is another violation, a basic violation of a pasuk in the Torah, and that is the nevela can't be left to hang for overnight. And we're talking about, not overnight, we're talking about an entire season over here. I'm Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shem, Amin Yehud Tzadik, Mutav Shetiakar, Osachas Menatara, Vizkadish Shem Shemayim, Bifar Hesya. Shayu Ovrim Vishavim Omrim Mativim Shaelo Halolu Bene Malachim Haim Ma'asu Pashtu Yedem Begerim Gerurim. So so once again, the answer is basically it's a Chilul Hashem. What they did, what their family did, was a Chilul Hashem, and so their bodies were left there to rot and decay and to be hung for such a long period of time. People would pass them by and people would say, "What's going on over here?" And the answer that was broadcast to the entire Jewish people and to the world at large is that, look, what they did is that this family, meaning everyone knew it was a family show. This family over here, Pashtu Yadam Begirim Gururim. So what they did is that they exploited a converted community, meaning the Gavonim were a converted community, going all the way back to the times of Yeshua. And this family exploited and violated this family, killing off Novi Arakawanim, cutting off the food supply to the Gavonim. That's a Chilul Hashem. And so what David HaMelech wanted to do is undo the Chilul Hashem by showing that this is not something that we take lightly. Amru ein lecha uma shavui lidabik ba kazu. When people saw that, so everyone said, oh, Jewish people are, they really care. I know this is a funny way to show how much we care, but the Jewish people really care. Meaning that what Shaul did to the Gavonim was cruel and unjust, and David HaMelech took this really seriously. So Uma b'nei Malachim kach b'nei Adjosh ha'achas kama v'kama. So if this is what we're going to do to the b'nei Malachim who abused and exploited and anybody, so for sure if anybody exploited or abused anybody, so the Jewish people would take them to court, would do justice. Uma gerim gerurim kach Yisrael achas kama v'kama. And if this is the way that the Jewish people are going to defend Gerim, so can you imagine Yisrael, how much more they're going to defend Yisrael as well? Miyad nitosu al Yisrael, mea v'chamishim elef. 150,000 people converted as a result of seeing how much David was ready to prepared to defend the honor of Gerim. So once people saw that, once nations of the world saw that, 150,000 Gerim. Shenem rav yidlo shalmoshivim elef nosei sevel. Ushmonim elef chotsev bahar. Shlomo HaMelech had 150,000 workers. They were all Gerim. 70,000, 80,000, all Gerim. V'dilma Yisrael Havu. So the Gemara says, now, didn't Shlomo HaMelech, couldn't it be that his workforce was made up of Jews? How do we know that they were Gerim? To which the Gemara says, answer, Lo Sakadavcha. No, we know they're Gerim. Dichsiv, Ubnei Yisrael, Lo Nason Shlomo Eved. Because the Pasuk tells us that Shlomo HaMelech did not employ anyone of the Jewish people. So his workforce of 150,000 people, so they were made up of Gerim. V'dilma Dugzar ba'alma. So the Gemara says, well, it's only possible that they were just hired. Elamehacha. So ve'yisaper Shlomo kol hanashim agarim hagerim asher be'eret Yisrael ve'imsu me'ev v'chamishim elef ve'yas me'em shivim elef nosei sevel shmonim elef chotzei bar. Okay, we have another pasuk in Devar Yamim that speaks clearly over here that they were gerim, that they were the converts that were employed by Shlomo HaMelech. Okay. Period ad kan. That takes us now through who are the Nesinim. So the short answer is they're Gavonim. And David HaMelech, because of the lack of rachmanis that they had for the family of Shaul, so David HaMelech made a gzera that even after they convert, they are going to become a Jew, but the Jewish people cannot marry them. A gzera of chasnos of ishus for the members of the Gavonim, which also go by the name of Nesinim. Okay, that is the long answer of the Gemara in terms of who they were and why we can't marry them. Just one other note over here. The Rishonim ask another really basic and obvious question, which is that during the times of David and Shlomo, Shlomo HaMelech, 150,000 converted because they saw how good the Jewish people are in terms of practicing justice and making sure that nobody would act in any exploitative manner towards another person, and that really appealed to the world at large, and 150,000 people converted. Meanwhile, here in Yevamos, earlier in our Masechta, we learned that during the generations of David and Shlomo, so we didn't accept Gerim. So over here, the Rishonim are by the very simple question. We're not allowed to accept Gerim during the periods of David and Shlomo, and meanwhile, during the period of David and Shlomo, 150,000 Gerim. Okay, that needs addressing. The Rishonim already addressed this question. The Rishonim give multiple answers. We're going to go on in the Gemara. So the Gemara's next step over here, Nesinim Davar Gazar Aleim, Moshe Gazar Aleim, Dichsiv, Michotev, Eitzim, Eitzecha, Achoev, Memecha. So Don't we find that the Gzera goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the Sefer Torah? So it's reported that from Chotev Etzecha, those who cut the wood, Achoev Memecha, those who draw the water, so those are already the Nisinim, they're the Gevonim. So Moshe Gazal Lahudara. David Gazal Lekule Alma, Lekule Dara. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. Moshe did make a Gzera against them, but only for one generation. David extended it for all future generations. Vakati Yoshua Gazar Laya. The Gemara says, okay, let's go back to Yoshua. Dechsiva, you name Yoshua, Bayamahu, Chotve Eitzecha, Eitzim, Vishoev Emayim. Le'eda ulemizbech Hashem. So we go back to Sefer Yoshua, Perek Tes, and we find the Givonim again, and we find that Yoshua made a Gzera against them again. Now I say again, obviously chronologically, Yoshua comes first. And even before that, Moshe came first. So we are now straddling three leaders of the Jewish people made a Gzera against the Givonim. Moshe did so, Yoshua did so, and David did so. But again, the redundancy. So as far as Moshe is concerned, there is no redundancy because Moshe only made it for one generation. Interestingly enough, the Gemara over here does not tell us why Moshe made the Gzera. Okay, so that's left as a question mark. I happen not to know. But anyway, Moshe made a Gzera for one generation. Yoshua gazar bizman shebeis hamikdash kayim. Yoshua made a Gzera that that we're not allowed to marry into the Givonim, again, post-conversion, for generations in perpetuity, but only while there's a Beis HaMikdash. Now that makes sense, because they are supplying to the Beis HaMikdash. So while they're in that position to supply to the Beis HaMikdash, so then the Gzera is going to be in force. And David Gazer Bizman Shein Beis HaMikdash Kayim. And David HaMelech had the Gzera now continue, meaning he made an addendum to the Gzera that not only is there a Gzera against the Givonim while there's a Beis HaMikdash, but even while there is no Beis HaMikdash. Now, it says that Yoshua made it while there was a Beis HaMikdash. Was there a Beis HaMikdash during the time of Yoshua? Obviously, the answer is no, but at the same time, there was a Mishkan. For Yoshua's time, it was temporarily set up in Gilgal, but then the Mishkan was eventually moved to Shiloh. Anyway, so I assume what the Gemara means by Yoshua and Mishkan and Mizbeach, he means also Mishkan as well. I assume that's the case. As far as David is concerned, so he extended the Gzera even to when there was no Beis HaMikdash. Interestingly, of course, during the times of David, the Beis HaMikdash wasn't even built. But still, by David, there was still a Mishkan. And again, the idea over here, the point over here, is that David extended it even when there was no Beis HaMikdash. So, as long as they're Givonim, so they can convert, but they cannot marry. And even if they are the progeny of Givonim, so incorporated in the Gzeras, that we're not allowed to marry them. Gemara has one end note to this entire discussion. We're on Ayin Tes Amud Beis. And one end note. Bimei Rebbe Bikshu Lahatir Nesinim. So during the time of Rebbe, so this is now obviously after Chorban Bayis Sheni, we're talking about over 100 years after Chorban Bayis Sheni. So Rebbe and his generation and his Beis Din wanted to repeal. So Amar Lahem Rebbe Chalkenu Atir Chelik Mizbech Miyatir. So and there was a movement to repeal, and Rebbe himself said no. He vetoed the bill. He said no, we're not going to repeal this gzera. Chalkeinu natir. We can repeal our chelek, but not the chelek of the mizbeach. Rashi over here points out. I'm reading the Rashi. Top Rashi in the Amud Beis. The Yecholim Beis in Lahatir LaHafker Chalkam Sheyisrael. The Kamilan Hefker Beis in Hefker. Look, as far as what the gzera was, and really what we're cutting into right now is a really another very basic question regarding exactly how the gzera works. What's the mechanics of the gzera? Meaning, what exactly is this ban going to be based on? So it seems to be from our Rashi, from our Gemara over here, that the ban is really principally on the fact that they're going to be workers. Meaning, when I say workers, I really mean avadim. That they're going to be avadim. And when there was a movement to try to repeal, basically, as Rashi over here points out, Tosfos says it also really clearly as well. I'll show you the Tosfos in just a moment. Is that what we were looking to do was just simply say, look, they're no longer going to be avadim, and by virtue of the fact that they're no longer going to be avadim, so then the ban is going to be repealed as a result of that, meaning hefker based in hefker. Right? Tosfos is bothered. You see the small Tosfos over here? Ein ze mevatel divrei based in chaver, the hefker based in hefker. Right? Meaning, if Moshe made a gzera and Yoshua made a gzera and David made a gzera, so we have a general rule. Ain based in Yachol Levato, Divrei based in Chaver, Elaim Kain, Gadol Mimenu, Bechachma Veminyan. We saw that in the beginning of Megillah, that comes up, we saw that in Rosh Hashanah, it comes up numerous times throughout Shas. And so the idea over here is that how could Rebbe even entertain the idea of repealing the ban when meanwhile you can't repeal unless you're a greater Bezdin? Who's going to be a greater Bezdin than David HaMelech, then Yehoshua, then Moshe? Again, Moshe was only for one generation, so you can take him out of the discussion. But who's going to be a larger Bezdin? So what Tosus is writing, and Rashi is writing it as well, is that this isn't a repeal so much of a gzera. This is just a removal of avdus. Meaning, once you remove the avdus, and that's a monetary issue. Once you remove the avdus, so then the ban gets undone by itself. Okay, that certainly seems to be the way Rashi and Tosfos is understanding. Amar lehem, I'm going back to the Gemara. We're just finishing up to the Mishnah now. Amar lehem, Rabbi Chalkinan atir chelik mizbeach miyatir. Look, we can untie, we can repeal our portion, meaning the monetary portion, but the chelik mizbeach, that we can't repeal. Now, as Rashi notes over here, there was no Mizbeach during the times of Rebbe. But, in other words, the ban was made up of two components. There was a monetary component to it, meaning our enslavement of these people. And on top of that, there was also a Mizbeach component to it, meaning they were tied to the Mizbeach as well, meaning it wasn't just that they were Avadim Stam, they were Avadim specific for the purpose and the detail of working for the Mizbeach. And that's something Rebbe says we can't repeal. Even though we don't have a Mizbeach anymore, we can't repeal it. We'll plead to Rebbe Chiya Bar Abba, Dam Rebbe Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rebbe Yochanan, Chelek Eida La'olam Asur, Chelek Mizbeach, Bezman Shebeis HaMikdash Kayim Asur, Ein Beis HaMikdash Kayim Shari. And Rebbe's position argues with Rav Ada says, Rav Chiya Bar Abba says, in the name of Rav Yochanan, that the Chelek Eida, that's always going to be Asur, but as far as the Chelek Mizbeach is concerned, that's only going to be around while there's a Mizbeach. When there's no Mizbeach, so that Chelek is by itself default removed. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of today's daf, a quick recap and a quick review. Tomorrow, obviously, we'll start with the new Mishnah. So today we discussed two groups of people where there's an Isser of Chasnas, and that Isser was going to exist in perpetuity. One is a Mamzerim and the other is an Asinim. So the Mamzerim, the Torah says, so lo yavo Mamzer b'kal Hashem, that's in Parshas Kiseitze, and the Ador Asiri, which we know means in perpetuity. Okay, and what we discussed in the beginning of today's daf is Reish Lakish had a Navel Chiddush, and that for the women 10 generations later, so they are going to be allowed. It's similar to Ammon and Moab, where the women are allowed, although they are immediately over here after 10 generations, but that's the opinion of Reish Lakish. Our Mishnah doesn't agree with the opinion of Reish Lakish, and the Gemara says that the divide between Reish Lakish and the Mishnah is going to be how to learn Gzira Shava, whether we say Domina Umina, or whether we say Domina Uke Basra. And then the Gemara categorized our Mamzerim into three categories, those who know, those who don't know, and those who are in Suffolk. Okay. Our big discussion for today, starting on Ayin Chesamud Beis and continuing to basically where we just ended in the Gemara. Ayin Chesamud Beis, a full daf of the Gemara dedicated to the topic of Nesinim. So who were they? The Gavonim. And what happened is that Gzera was made against them, that even after they convert, we're not allowed to marry them. Not them, not their children, not their grandchildren, in perpetuity. This is Gzera that was made by... Now, this fill in the blank is going to be a little bit challenging. So it was made by Moshe. It was made by Yehoshua. It was made by David and his Beis Din. So how do you have three leaders of the Jewish people all making the same gzera? So as we saw through the daf today, right, and we're obviously in the summer, we're giving the short version. Moshe made it for one generation. Yehoshua made it for all generations, but only while there was a Beis HaMikdash, and David HaMelech made it even to extend beyond where we have a Beis HaMikdash. That's the short version of it. And today, what we got was a lot of insight into the 21st parak of Shmuel Beis, where there we're given some of the story. Here in our Gemara today, we're given more of the story regarding David and the Gavonim. Ad Kan.